This is HPR episode 2145 entitled Daily Notes and To-Do List with Markdown. It is hosted by Norrist and is about 25 minutes long. The summary is how I use Markdown and Git to keep up with what I do.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
I'm going to record an episode about a method I use, notes, and keep up with what I've done for the day, have something to look back on, and also to kind of keep a simple to-do list. It's not like a to-do manager, a list of things that I want to put somewhere, then I'll forget. Fundamental to the way I take notes and the way I keep my list is that I use Markdown to do it. And I know Markdown has been discussed on the show before. Specifically when it comes to I remember discussions about Markdown and use Markdown. I'm not going to do a whole show on what Markdown is, but I will talk a little bit about syntax, Markdown syntax that I use. And I will say this, Markdown is, what I like about Markdown is that its syntax is simple and it doesn't get in your way. You can write something without being distracted by, so just as a quick aside, one of my previous jobs, I had to write some documentation. I had to write a lot of documentation. And I did it in Microsoft Word. And I would get so caught up in what bullets and font sizes, how many tabs. I would get so frustrated with myself because I know I'm why can't I just sit down and write something? So I didn't know about Markdown at the time. It may not have even at the time, but I knew I wanted Markdown. I just didn't know what it was. Now that I have it, I use it just about anywhere I can, especially when it comes to documentation. It was just made for writing documents. But also, this whole episode is about, I use it note-taking. Sort of another, it's not quite essential part of this, is I use Git along, in this process, I use to store my documents. That way I can store my lists and my notes. That way I have a record. I can look back on. But also, if you use something like GitHub or GitLab or whatever your web-based Git repository of choice is, it probably, as far as I know, most of them render Markdown into some nice-looking HTML. So what I'll do is, if I need to look back on my notes or read something or read my to-do list, I don't normally open up these text documents that I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. Normally, I look at the Git repository webpage. It's easy to read. Another big advantage of Markdown is it's legible and pretty, easy to look at inside GitHub. So a few reasons I really like Markdown, if I haven't already talked enough about it. I know I've already said it's distractionless. The syntax, simple. And easy to remember. With some Markdowns, you have to, if you're making a header, you have to make the header syntax before and after the line, and you have to match them up. If you make a wiki Markdown, you have to make, some weird syntax thing at the beginning and at the end of the line to make a proper header. But with Markdown, you put a single hash mark at the beginning. That's H1. And when I say hash mark, I mean the tic-tac-toe sign or the octothorpe or whatever you want to call it. I'm going to call it a hash mark. And if you want to make H3, you do three hash marks. My point is it's simple syntax. You don't have to think much about it. I don't catch myself having to go back to the documentation. I remember how to do it. It's easy to get the hang of. Another good thing about Markdown is that it's human readable even in its unrendered form. So the Markdown syntax is kind of out of the way. So even if you're looking at the plain Markdown unrendered, it's still easy to read and nice to look at. You know, I look at, when I'm going to review something, I look at the rendered page on GitHub. But that's just because, I mean, a lot of that is just because it's in my browser, it's open, and I got a bookmark for it. It's not too difficult to go back and grab the individual file. You can embed inline HTML if you want to. So if you've got some images, something else that you want to put inside the Markdown, you can just put an image tag or a code tag, or whatever HTML tags you want. Normally, when you view a Markdown document after it's been converted to HTML, any HTML you put in the Markdown will be outputted HTML. And speaking of that, the last advantage I have down of using Markdown is that it's really easy to convert from Markdown to another format. I know Markdown was sort of created to have an easy way to write HTML, and most of the Markdown tools available are just taking your Markdown and converting it to HTML, especially if you use something like Pandoc, which I feel like has been mentioned on the show before. But if you haven't looked at Pandoc and you do anything with documents at all, you need to stop what you're doing right now. Go look at Pandoc. It is some amazing software. But if you use something like Pandoc with Markdown, you can convert Markdown into anything you can think of. I'm not even going to begin to list. Look at Pandoc. It's so enough about the whys. Let's talk a little bit about the how. So the first thing I do is I have a document just called todo.md or todo.mark. At the top of it, you know, I've got a single hash mark and the word to do. So I know I've got a big header at the top of the page that says this is your to-do list. And then I divide it up into things I can do now and things later that are, you know, maybe a week away. And then I've got sort of at the bottom, I've got something long-term or projects that are the things that I probably can't do anything about today, but just sort of a list of things that I don't want to lose track of. And, you know, the things I can do now, the things I can do in a little bit, you know, and the long-term project. Each one of those sections has a H3 or three little hash marks at the beginning of the section. And then for each item underneath it, I use the bullets, which in Markdown is an asterisk or star sign, whatever you want to call it. And that, you know, for each item, I just have an asterisk what I need to do. And then, you know, I can add to it or take away from it, or if there's something that I've done but I want to maybe still remember it for a day or two, Markdown has a pretty simple syntax for strikeout. So instead of just deleting the line, I'll mark it with the strikeout symbols, which is a couple of tildes, and that'll mark the line at a strike through. Or I'll just, you know, if I just mark something down so I'd remember it and then I did it and I don't care about it anymore, so that's the to-do page. That's pretty simple. I know there wasn't anything revolutionary there. Anybody who's ever made a to-do list has probably done something very similar, even in Markdown. Okay, so sort of the key to this process, and the only reason that I can remember to use this with any regularity, is I have a launcher that sits on my desktop, and then when I click it, it automatically opens my editor with today's page for notes. So I have a different page for a different page of notes for every day. So when I click on this launcher, if today's page of notes doesn't exist, it will create it for me, and it'll also fill it out a little bit. So just sort of as a skeleton blank daily note document, I have divided up into three sections. Well, first I have the date at the top with a single hash mark, so it's in a, when it's rendered, it's H1 tag with today's date. And then I have three separate sections. Each section has hash marks in front of it. So the sections are projects, and this is like any sort of long-term project I'm working on, but I did something with that project today. I'll record it somewhere under the projects header. I have one for tickets. So we have like at work, we have a ticket tracking system, and I don't do a lot of stuff with our ticket system, But I do two or three things a day. And so whenever I do something in there, I just like to keep up with it, mostly because someone's going to come back later and ask me about it. And I want to have something to jog my memory about what I did. And I feel like, too, I can keep more personal notes in my daily task tracker than I can in the ticketing system. So in the ticketing system, when I do something, I'll put a note in there. But because a lot of times those tickets get seen by customers, managers, you know, I can't always put all the details that I might need to come back to it. So section one, project, section two, tickets. And the last section is for walk-ups. So a big part of what I do is unplanned and unscheduled. And if it wasn't for this, it would be untracked. So this is just someone sending me an email or walking up to my desk or sending me an IM saying, asking me a question about something. How does this work? Or where did this go? Or why is this broken? Or can you do this for me? Can you fix this for me? Can you complete this task? And if it's something big, I'll say, why don't you go back, make a ticket, and I'll answer it through the ticketing system. But a lot of times it's something small, so I'll just go and do it for them. But I want a record of it just for a lot of the same reasons. I'll mark it down, walk-ups. And I'll keep the tasks similar to I did with the to-do page. So under each section, I'll just make a bullet with an asterisk what I did. And then sometimes, I don't do this every day, but sometimes if there's something that doesn't fit well in those three, I'll add a fourth section at the bottom. Or if it's something that I want to take sort of more extensive notes on and not necessarily clutter up one of the other sections in there, I'll do that. Just as an example, we have a development environment that I wanted to make some changes to, and change three or four different IP addresses. I wanted a place that I could sort of write the old ones and the new ones down and have a place I could always go back and look. And that didn't really fit anywhere in the other three sections, so I just kind of made a chart down at the bottom. You know, whatever day I did this, I made a chart like down at the bottom of the old addresses. You get the idea. Okay, so I've mentioned the launcher, and I'm going to talk a little bit through how the launcher works, but I'll have some show notes written in Markdown that I'll upload with the show, so you can kind of see. I know it's not always helpful to hear someone read out a script, so I'm not going to do that. I'll kind of talk through it and some of the different parts of it, but I'll put the whole thing in the show. Go back and look at those. Now, one little caveat before I get started working on the script is that if you primarily work on Linux, this script may look a little weird to you, and that's because I use a Mac at work. It's what we use. It's what we're given. It makes a lot of things easier. There's stuff like email and some other apps that we need that won't work on Linux. But still, if you're not familiar with Macs, it comes with a free BSD runtime. So you can open a terminal, and most of the stuff you're used to being there on Linux. On a Mac, some of the commands are a little different, which is why I'm bringing this up. But there's nothing in here that you couldn't do on a Linux system. And, there's so many different desktop environments and terminals and editors. There's no way for me to, make a script that would work for everybody. But, if this is something you're interested in using, it wouldn't be too hard to modify the launcher, where you put it, how you launch it, the specific commands in it. So anyway, if you have a Mac, this one will probably work. You'll have to change a few paths fit your user instead of mine. But anyway. So the first thing that the script does is sets up some variables. The first one names the daily file. So I said I've got a different file of task for every day. So the first one says, okay, today's file should be named this. The second thing is it sets a path. So where, all these files are stored, the to-do file and all of these daily files are stored in the place. So there's a variable called daily path that says where that is. I have a lock file variable. So When I first started doing this, I would catch myself launching the script multiple times, and that kind of messed up one of the steps in it. I'll tell you about in a second. The last step is spell checks everything. So if I launched it one time and I launched it a second time, it would just kind of mess up the spell check step. And sometimes I would end up, if I close them out of order, I would lose some work. So what I did was I made a lock file. So if the script is launched, it writes a lock file. If I try to launch it again, it'll say, hey, there's a lock file. We'll get to that part in a second. But there's of the four variables that are in the beginning of the script, the third one is what the lock file should be. And the fourth one is the to-do file. So the first document I talked about, to-do.md. So the first part of the script is for the lock file, and this is pretty basic. I'm 90% sure if you just search for bash lock file, you'd come across the same code that is. So I found it somewhere, and I don't remember where. I copied it. It works. It says there's a, if the lock file exists, then echo the lock file is present. Do you want to continue? Press yes or no. Press yes, it continues. If you press no, it exits. That's pretty. And then if the lock file doesn't exist, when you start the script, if the lock file doesn't exist, it will create the lock. And I know a lock file isn't the 100% best way to ensure a script doesn't run multiple times. And, you know, in a lot of use cases, I wouldn't recommend a lock file. There's better ways to do it. But in this particular case, since it's just me doing it, and I'm probably not going to mess this up, so lock file is okay. So after we checked for the presence of the lock file, we checked for the presence of the daily. So if the file for today's task doesn't exist, if it does exist, it just moves on. If it doesn't exist, it will create sort of a skeleton for me. And I've already talked through what that is. It, you know, it's the date and then a header for each thing I want to work on that day. And it builds it just by, you know, echoing something with a double redirect sign to the daily file variable. So it's just a series of echo statements that builds out the skeleton of what I'd like to do for the day. Okay. So far in the script, we check for a lock file, and we check for the daily task file, and if it doesn't exist, the next step is we open the daily task file in our editor. On the Mac, I use a program called Text Wrangler. You can probably do this with any text editor. One thing that if you use a different editor, with Text Wrangler, the command is user local bin edit. And then I give it the dash W flag. And what that does is that makes, a lot of times when you open a program from, when you open a GUI program from the command line, it'll just open the program and then return you back to the shell. And that's what edit does by default. But I don't want that. I want when this script opens the editor, I want the script to stop until the editor closes. Because there's some things that are going to happen after I close the editor. I don't want them to happen until I close. So if you use a different editor, that's just something you need to figure out, that step. And it may happen by default. Not every GUI program does that, where it, you know, when you launch most GUI programs, when you launch it, it'll hold the shell open and won't continue with the script until you close whatever. And that's the behavior you want. So I'll click on the launcher. It'll run through this script. It'll launch the editor. I'll do whatever, you know, I'll type. Sometimes I leave it open for a while. Sometimes I open it, type one thing in it, and close it. But either way, whenever I'm done with it, I press the X. It closes, and then it continues in the script. So after the line in the script to open the editor, it spell checks the document with ASPEL. That's ASP. And if you don't, this is another, just like Pandoc, I'm not going to do an episode on Pandoc. I'm not going to do an episode on ASPEL. But if you do not know what ASPEL is, you stop what you're doing right now and go check it out. It is by far the best spell check. And I'm a terrible speller. If it wasn't for spell check, I would look like I hadn't been to school. I cannot spell at all. And with a lot of programs, like, I can misspell something so badly that the spell checker doesn't know how to fix it. It is very rare that I spell something so badly that Aspell doesn't know how to fix it. Like, if I misspell a word and it doesn't recognize, it'll give me like 10 different things. Did you mean this? You know, and 99% of the time, what I actually meant is in the list. And with Aspell, you can add, you know, it can learn words. If you have, like I have a lot of sort of jargon only I would use or only use in my company or sort of industry that I don't want it to trip on. So you can add that. And Aspell is probably just as key to this whole process. Anything else I've talked about. So when I close a document, Aspell checks the daily file. It also checks the to-do file. Now, I don't have the script automatically open the to-do file every time I launch it, but I'd say probably 10 or 15% of the times when I do launch this script, I go ahead and open up the to-do file anyway, either, you know, maybe in another editor or in the same editor in the same window or something. But it's frequent enough that I have the to-do file open that I'll spell check it in this process. So once I've done the spell check, we'll remove the lock file, and then I'll remove the README. And I haven't talked about the README yet, so this is probably going to be... So I'll stop right here and kind of say what the README... if you've ever looked at a project on GitHub or in GitLab or whatever, usually when you open up the project page, you'll see a list of files, and then underneath it, there'll be some word describing what that file is. So what most of the web-based Git repositories do is if you have a file in that repository, in the root of it, that's called README, and it's README.md, or there's some other formats that it can do. Whenever you open that up, it'll automatically display the README as HTML, even though it's Markdown. So so what I do, and I'll walk through the steps in a second, is every time I close this script, I rebuild the README file by echoing the to-do list, the to-do.markdown at the top, and then all the daily files. So if you look at the README file, the first thing you'll see is the to-do dot markdown, and then in order, you know, start today, going back in time until the beginning, you'll see all of my daily notes. So I've got, you know, I've got a separate to-do document, I've got separate documents for every day, but all of those are combined in a way that works good for me into a single README document. So most of the time when I want to go back and I look, I have this README document bookmarked. It's one of the, you know, few bookmarks I actually have in my browser. I'll just click on that. It opens the README page. It's all right there. So after that diversion, we'll come back to the script. So we do the editing, we do the spell checking, we remove the lock file. And then the first part of building that big README is I need to delete the old README. So I RM the README. Then I cat the to-do file to the README. And then I have a for loop where it lists all the markdown files and then it cats them to the README. And then there's an echo at the end of that that just puts a blank line. So this one kind of weird thing about markdown is that sometimes I find myself having to add some extra empty lines to make it render correctly. And this is one that you'll see if you ever see just an echo going direct, you know, if you ever see just a command that's just echo redirecting to a file, that's what it's doing in this script. It's just making it. So the last part of this script is that the Git check-in process. So I use Git, but if you have another, if you want to use Mercurial or CVS or whatever, or nothing. But I like using Git for a handful of reasons that I've talked about before. But there's just the last line in the script is CD into the folder where all this stuff is, doing a git add, which adds any new files. So, you know, every day I create a new file, you're going to add git add command and a git commit command. And usually in Git, when you do a commit, you want to have something useful in the commit message. But when you automate git commits like this, it's a little harder to do. So most of the time when I automate a git commit, I just have the commit message be the timestamp. And I do that in this case with the date commit. So git commit, and then a git push origin master, you know, pushes everything I just did, including the brand new Markdown file, up to Git server. So I'm going to summarize all this one more time because I know I'm like a lot. So just to summarize the script, the first thing it does is sets up a few variable names. The next part, it checks for a locked file. If it exists, delete it and move on. Or if it doesn't exist, it just keeps on going and creates a locked file. The next part of the script looks for the daily file. If it is there, it moves on. If it's not there, it sort of builds out a skeleton daily file for me. Then it opens the daily file, and then when I'm done with that, I close the editor, spell checks the daily file and the to-do file. Then it removes the locked file, and then we rebuild the README. So the first step of rebuilding the old README, you cat the to-do file to the README, all the daily files to check it into Git. It's as simple as that. That's all I got for today. You guys have a good day.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.